Hello and welcome back to Easy Being Green, Lessons in Sustainable Business for SMEs. This is episode 6 and I'm Charlie, your host, coming to you today on a beautiful April spring day in the UK, and you might be able to hear the gorgeous blackbirds singing their tune in the background. I thought I'd leave my door open for this intro to get us all into a beautiful mood for this podcast episode, which is a little bit late this fortnight. And that's because we did a special Earth Day collaboration with our mates at Green Pixie, where I spoke with Head of Sustainability, Rory Brown, about the tangible ways that businesses can achieve net zero and the impact that putting the world online has had for the planet. And that was in a special one-off masterclass. And if you missed that, fear not. You can hear the conversation that I had with Rory right here, right now. Plus, some bonus content that was not in the masterclass as we dive into how Rory ended up in his role at Green Pixie. And of course, the question we ask all our podcast guests, is there such a thing as a sustainable business yet? Stay tuned at the end of this chat for a very special offer from the good humans at Green Pixie. Rory, thank you so much for coming to talk to me today.
Thanks, Charlie. Good to be here.
Excellent. So first off, let's get straight into it. I've got this feeling that there is an assumption out there that if you work in the field of sustainability, or even if you just are somebody who cares about the planet, that you understand all the jargon that is banded around out there. And I say some of these words and I think, do I actually know what they mean? So having you here today, I'm going to use this opportunity to get you to explain these things to me like I am 5. And these things are, what is digital carbon? What are cloud emissions? And what is net zero?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Pressure's on now. So I guess there's the two kind of groups there. So there's the digital side of things and then the wider business side of things, which is the net zero targets. So digital carbon is the emissions that are associated with the digital sector as a whole. So quite broad. The cloud computing emissions are those emissions that are directly from cloud computing. Mm-hmm. So that's when a company is, say, developing a new digital product, or they are hosting and delivering a new product, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. So it's the computation that goes on directly within a company. Mm-hmm. And digital carbon is everything else that surrounds that, you know. So that's like us right now on Zoom, or it's, you know, browsing your phone, that kind of thing. So cloud computing sits within, it's a significant part of, but it sits within digital carbon itself. And net zero is banded around quite a lot. It seems to be everywhere at the moment. Mm-hmm. And it's not just relevant for businesses, it's like an idea that anything that kind of exists in the world that's new in the world should not bring any new emissions, mm-hmm, to the atmosphere. So that could be, you know, for an individual, you could be, if you wanted to be a net zero person, be pretty hard, but you could be, and that would mean that all your activities and things would have no overall contribution to greenhouse gases. Mm-hmm. And for a company, it means that, you know, their operations, their products, their staff, their offices, everything, just by them existing, they're not adding any emissions to the atmosphere. And yeah, you've seen it spreading quite a lot, you know, to have like a net zero event where, you know, all the travel that's associated with the event and whatever artists are there and all that kind of thing is either offset or done in a way that there's no overall emissions, overall like contribution to the atmosphere. So I'm not sure if I'm jumping ahead here, but net zero for companies basically means that you need to measure your emissions. Mm-hmm. You need to report your emissions, mm-hmm. and then you need to work to reduce them, mm-hmm. Ideally to zero. But, you know, we don't live in an ideal world. Mm-hmm. And for some companies, depending on industry and what they're doing, it's at this stage going to be almost impossible to go right down to zero just through reductions. For some companies, they can do it. And at that point, the deficit between maximum reductions and overall net zero is where some companies choose to offset or invest in carbon removal, mm-hmm. Or biodiversity projects, that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. They're like planting trees, that kind
of thing. Yeah. Planting trees. There's all sorts of different projects and organizations out there that promise to remove that last little bit. But we always say, and I believe that reduction is the most important bit. Otherwise you're kind of plastering over a problem.
So talking about reduction, so we're talking net zero, it's all about what we're putting into the atmosphere in terms of greenhouse gases being equal with what we take out. So if we are putting less into the atmosphere, then we have to worry less about what we take out. Is that right? So that's what you mean when you're talking about reducing your emissions?
Yeah. So let's for an SME that, I don't know, makes eco coffee cups, let's say. Yeah. If they want to go net zero, they would look at their whole sort of the way that their products are manufactured and marketed and delivery and all this kind of stuff, calculate what the overall impact of their business is, mm-hmm. And including staffing and those kind of operational things as well, because for some companies that's quite significant. So you calculate what your number is. You then highlight areas where you can make some quite easy reductions. So, mm-hmm. I don't know, maybe it's like changing your distribution hub to wherever most of your clients are, that kind of thing, just mm-hmm. off the top of my head. Mm-hmm. And then once you've kind of maxed out your reductions, ideally, every year there's going to be more and more feasible ways of reducing all your emissions. Once you've maxed that out, if you want to go the whole way, you then look to kind of offsets. So it's a last resort in a way, but often essential. Yeah.
Now, I've spoken to many businesses over the years, and one of the it's becoming less and less because the awareness is getting much better. But I have had many business founders say to me, "Oh well, we're just online, so that's okay. We're just online, so we don't have very many emissions." And I guess that's the problem with what you're talking about, the digital emissions and what we started talking about, the cloud and digital carbon, is that it's invisible and it's not something you can see. It's not the car that you're driving to work or, like you say, where your distribution center is and where your products are being sent out from. So tell us a bit about Green Pixie, because that's your jam, isn't it? That's what you guys are doing. So how are you guys helping businesses who want to achieve net zero or on their journey towards sustainability to reduce their emissions?
Yeah. So we at Green Pixie, I guess more broadly, like sustainability and all this kind of field or movement or whatever you kind of want to call it, mm-hmm. Isn't a static thing, So every year things are improving and developing, and while 5 years ago the idea of a company being purely online would be seen as the ultimate goal, mm-hmm. Nowadays even talking like terms of 5 years, it's becoming the norm in a way. So there's companies that don't have and never have had, never will have physical presence, physical products, mm-hmm. There's sometimes even there's no travel involved, and everything is done in the cloud, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And at the moment, it's a bit of a gap in the way things are done. And the digital sector is only going to grow. You know, I think in ahead 5 years again, there's less digital companies out there than there is today. I'll eat my hat. And who knows, in 100 years, we have no idea how this field will develop. Like, maybe there will be no physical companies, no offices, no physical products even. Like, we don't know where this will go. Mm. Seeing as we are still kind of relatively early stage, we believe it's like important to start accounting for the impact that digital has now. Because like you said, it's this invisible. I do think there's a lot of like kind of similarities in a way between digital emissions and, you know, greenhouse gas emissions in a way, and the way that like the public understanding of the way climate change happens and the way that emissions affect the our environment and our planet, the way that understanding kind of developed. So, you know, before perhaps our like great grandparents would see gases, or rather not see gases, going into the atmosphere, and obviously if you can't see it, it's not an issue, right?
Yeah.
And it takes a while to realize that because the problem's invisible, it doesn't mean it's, you know, doesn't mean it's not important. It often means that actually you need to act now. And that's where we kind of fit in. We're trying to put a lens on digital operations and the digital environment, and let those that need to kind of, I guess, see and have a vision of their real impact, because it is so intangible to some people, unless you're really in the industry and you really know how the internet works, which, you know, I would hazard to say no one really knows.
No.
You know, there's no expert out there on, you know, exactly how the internet works. There's a lot of it's so intricate. And we're trying to put a lens on that to help companies kind of take account of their emissions. The way we're addressing this issue is developing Cloud Net Zero, mm-hmm. Which is in development at the moment. And SMEs in particular, it'd be quite interesting for them to sign up on our website and give the beta version a go in the next month, actually. Mm-hmm. And what Cloud Net Zero will do is it will allow companies with a heavy digital presence and those that have digital products, mm-hmm. that kind of thing, or they have a lot of computation that goes on, or tech-heavy companies, it will allow them to equate their cloud server usage with emissions, basically. Mm-hmm. And companies can do with that data whatever they please. Mm-hmm. Most companies are interested in terms of incorporating it into their carbon accounting, mm-hmm. Carbon footprinting. Mm-hmm. So that gives companies a baseline. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this year our emissions for cloud computing are X amount. Mm-hmm. And that then allows them to set targets as part of net zero strategies, mm-hmm. to bring that figure down over the coming years. It doesn't mean that, you know, you need to cut down on how much computation you're doing. It means doing it in a more efficient way. So that's what we're doing at the moment.
Brilliant. You mentioned their reporting. So I'm going to ask you about a bit more about that. Mm-hmm. ESG reporting. What is it and why is it important? I've heard it talked about a lot in kind of the investment world, but for smaller businesses, for SMEs, is it something that we should be thinking about, and how do we go about it?
ESG is a bit of a weird one. I think I'd like Yeah, if I was going to try and explain ESG, I think I would describe it more as ultimately as a philosophy, as like an idea. And it's like the idea that those with money to invest and those who don't want their money to be invested in particular areas that, a lot of us consider to be unethical or controversial or areas that don't benefit the world as a whole. They need a way of kind of comparing different investments and making informed decisions on where their money should go, and kind of comparing companies against a bit of an industry standard in a way. So ESG stands for environmental, social, and governance. So although we're here like talking about the environmental, the E, the idea of ESG investing also takes into account, the social impact of a company, both internally and externally as well. So like diversity within the workforce and in all kinds of ways. And governance is the idea that, some companies are mini nations in themselves, so like they need to be governed well and fairly. And the idea is that if they're governed well and fairly, they're going to have a better, a more positive impact on the world. But from the environmental side of things, the yeah I would say that the E has become increasingly important. So there's estimates at the moment that by 2025, about a third of all assets under management are going to have some kind of ESG rating. And that sort of market share would actually put ESG funds and ESG companies in a much more powerful position than the fossil fuel industry, which is it's already the case. But by 2025, it's going to be quite a clear and significant shift in terms of like market power in favor of companies which in theory have a net positive impact on the planet and on people.
Wow, that's interesting. That's not long to go, and that's really good to hear. I mean, we've written on Earth Collective a lot about investors putting the pressure on big corporations to divest from fossil fuels, and that's been sort of petering away in the background. But it's good to hear that it kind of sounds like it's coming in as a regulatory measure in a wider sense.
Yeah, definitely. There's also like interesting like industry movements as well. Like B Corp in a way is a measurement of ESG. It's just a kind of different lens. So that's why I think it's like more of a kind of idea and a kind of philosophy. And when you see ESG funds or like sustainable investing written somewhere, it is just that kind of that concept, that idea that money should be going to good places and not to fossil fuel companies and that kind of thing. And it's also it's agency, so like if you need to if you're an investor. And we all are in our own kind of ways. We all invest in global economies through what we do. If you are under the impression that your money is going somewhere that has a positive environmental, social impact, you kind of want a guarantee of that, and the idea of ESG is to have a bit of a baseline and a bit of evidence behind those kind of claims.
That's really interesting, and it's interesting you mentioned B Corp, because I think, and I wrote this in the article that we collaborated with Green Pixie on this week, was that if you Google ESG, it comes up at all about investing, and as the layperson or just a human being existing in the world who doesn't who either owns a small company that you're never going to want investment from, or who doesn't own a company at all and just works, that can be a bit off-putting because you think, oh, well, this is something that isn't, you know, that's not for me. That's for startups who are after funding, or it's for, you know, publicly listed companies or whatever it is. But when you put it back to B Corp, like I look for the B Corp, like that for me, the B Corp, if I see the B Corp logo, say B Corp again, B Corp, if I see the B Corp logo on packaging, like we have Gusto meal delivery boxes, meal, you know, box things, recipe boxes.
Yeah, yeah.
And one reason I went with them as opposed to any competitor was because they were a B Corp. So for me, that's like a really easy, as a consumer, a really easy checkbox to say, okay, I know this company is doing good things. And I guess that's what we need to look at ESG reporting as well. Like when you talked about us all being investors, and as a consumer, you're an investor, and as somebody who buys things, you're investing in small businesses, hopefully. So if a small business can show that they have invested themselves by looking at their ESG reporting, that's another kind of tick box, and that's something that we potentially should be thinking about as consumers as to where we invest our money.
Yeah, it's a really interesting way of like comparing them, actually, like the B Corp and the, I guess that the B Corp stamp to the consumer is exactly what the ESG stamp is to the investor. It's that kind of, okay, I can buy this, I can invest in this with a clear mind. And yeah, it's an interesting trend. You know, I guess it started with like the Fair Trade and Rainforest Alliance, and the B Corp seems to have superseded a lot of them recently.
It has, isn't it? It's a bit more all encompassing. I think it's something
we were
waiting for. So I am a business, and I have listened to this conversation, and I'm sold ESG reporting. I want to get into it. Where do I start, and how do I report it? Am I going to put it all into an Excel spreadsheet or a Google sheet? Like, where do we get started?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, if a business asks me how to start, I would say just start. You know, don't let, if you're doing any reporting and any attempts to calculate, particularly as an SME, your emissions, don't let those kind of things hold you back. And I would say just really, there's a lot of resources out there now that can help you. Mm-hmm. If you're doing it on a spreadsheet or on Google Sheets or even on with pen and paper, depending on the size of your business, the important thing is that you're doing it. And you know, all roads lead to Rome. There's many ways to skin a cat, but the important thing is that like you're calculating and you're reducing, and I think importantly that you're reporting it as well, so that like your clients and consumers can see that this is your intention, that you're taking action. There's been a huge boom recently in softwares to help companies do this, some better than others, some more expensive than others, but I think as an SME, that's all you can do off your own back. And again, depending on the size of the business, there's no reason why you should go out there and spend a huge amount to calculate. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it just depends how much time you have, I guess. For bigger companies, it's obviously a whole of the ball game, and it takes whole departments of experts to calculate things. Where we kind of fit into that is taking, I guess, what is now like one of the hardest things to calculate for a company, which is your digital emissions and your cloud emissions. Mm-hmm. And turning it into like the easiest part of it. So really, yeah, it's ultimately, I would say, just start doing it and take advantage of all the resources you can. Particularly as an SME, there's often ways of doing things and obtaining like softwares and tools and guides and stuff. Without some of the sometimes like eye-watering figures that big businesses have to contend with. And also like just chat to people, other people that are doing it, That's one of the best ways. I think everyone's, if you're having a problem like footprinting the label you're using, I think in this kind of community, in this kind of sector, there's no issue with reaching out to another brand or another company that's using, particularly for SMEs, using perhaps the same label or a similar label, and just saying like, you know, are you calculating it? How did you, perhaps we can work it out together, that kind of thing. So yeah, just start today, because it'll take a while.
So what they say, the best time to plant a tree was 50 years ago, the second best time is today. So it's the same thing, just get started.
And plant trees.
And plant trees. That's a great segue. I was literally just going to ask you about that. So lots of businesses do plant trees, or they, like you say, spend money with an organization or a charity that is going to offset carbon emissions for them. We've spoken a lot about reducing the emissions we're putting out there in the first place, and how digital carbon is a really good area to be looking at, and cloud emissions. Is it still impactful to be planting trees with every purchase, or, you know, offsetting your travel emissions through a charity? Is it still worth doing those things?
That comes up a lot, and it's it's becoming quite controversial, isn't it, really, like the idea of planting trees and that kind of thing. Whereas that was not that long ago, that was the kind of gold standard of that was the most a company could be doing, in a way, was planting trees. I think like we don't offer that as a service, like not because we disagree with it at all, but more because that's the choice of a company to do that, or a person. I've seen arguments around, and like people really slamming like tree planting and biodiversity projects and stuff, which I do find a little bit hard to agree with, because planting a tree, although it might not be the best thing in the world, it's definitely not like a negative if it's done right. And there are a lot of organizations and projects and things that do great stuff. So there's like Gold Standard is one organization, and you know, they have like verified projects, and I think as well carbon removal is perhaps like the latest iteration of that idea of offsetting and tree planting. It can be a great option for companies, but they don't always come with some of the other like intangible benefits, environmental benefits of stuff like tree planting, which is like the biodiversity side of things. Often there's like social benefits attached to it as well. So really, I think if I had a big carbon footprint as a company to reduce, I'd obviously start there and reduce it all the way to zero as far as I could. And if I had a little debt at the end, I would probably have a kind of portfolio and combine both approaches, so removals and offsets. And the worst thing that happens is you do a bit too much, and that's fine. Because I'm sure there's companies out there that aren't doing enough. So, you know, you can't go wrong, really. I wouldn't get too bogged down in the complexities of whether it's right or wrong to plant a tree and do it. And it's super cheap now as well, you know? Yeah. So why not?
I agree. I mean, I think it comes down to everything, isn't it? Do your research and make sure that where your investment is going in all of these cases is going to somewhere where it's going to be used in the right way for the right purpose, and is helping the right people and the planet as well. So yeah, I agree.
Yeah, definitely.
Another piece of the jargon puzzle of all this net zero carbon emissions, all that stuff, is scope 1, 2, and 3. So can you explain a little bit more about what these are?
Yeah. I think it takes everyone a long time to get their head around it, and potentially no one ever quite fully understands it. It's quite a intricate, well, in some ways very simple, in some ways very kind of complicated and confusing framework. So it's basically the concept of breaking down a company's emissions into different portions or scopes or segments. Mm-hmm. And it stems from something called the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, which is an international agreement that has sought to standardize the way things are done. So if you go and do, you know, read around this after or have read around this before, it's often shortened to GHGP or GHG protocol. Right. And it's like, it's by far the most common method of reporting for companies. For those companies that do report, this is the most common method. I think it's something like between 80 and 90% of companies that report use this framework. Okay. And the scoping of emissions accounts rather for like the varying degrees of control that a company has over those emissions. Mm-hmm. So direct and indirect. I think I find for myself anyway, the best way to kind of imagine them is to break them down into kind of the context of your own like personal life, rather than trying to imagine how a company operates, and like, because they're all so different, and yeah, that used to really confuse me. Mm-hmm. So you have scope one, which is like direct emissions. Mm-hmm. Scope two is indirect emissions, from purchased energy. Okay. And scope three is all other indirect emissions from sources that aren't owned or controlled by a company. So scope one, if you think about you think of scope one as being everything that you directly emit from inside your house. Mm-hmm. So I think the perfect example would be if you have a fireplace, right. And you put wood on the fire, that's a scope one emission. You have total control over that. You know, you're choosing to burn wood in your house to generate warmth. And your emissions from your car as well would fall under this. And for a company, that would equate to like, if you have delivery vehicles or fleet vehicles, that kind of thing. Okay. Scope two is the indirect purchase of electricity, mm-hmm. Or energy by a company. So like, I guess using the same analogy again, if you don't have a fireplace, but you've got like an electric heater or something, or if you're someone that's not England, maybe some electrical air conditioning, mm-hmm. That would be scope two, because you're using energy that's been produced somewhere else to perform an activity. Gotcha. But an important like distinction, which I think separates type one and two quite well, is like, so let's say like the air conditioning was to leak its coolant fluid on your property, on the wall of your house. That has quite a significant greenhouse gas impact, like the chemicals and things that are used within air conditioning. So that leakage, like on your property, like on your watch, mm-hmm. that's scope one, because you have control and the power to stop that from happening. Whereas the electricity that's used to power the air conditioning is scope two, because you can't necessarily control how that electricity is made. But you can ensure that your aircon doesn't leak, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, that makes sense. It's a good way of describing it.
Yeah, I think so. It might sound, maybe, I hope that makes sense.
It does. It was really good.
And scope three is the indirect, uncontrolled, and like unowned, if unowned is a word, unowned emissions of a company. So this is like, the emissions that stem from the manufacture of your air conditioning unit or your fireplace, or, you know, the emissions associated with growing the wood that you burn in your fireplace. And it's the largest scope in terms of emissions. There's all kinds of varying figures that get bandied around as to how much percentage of a company's overall emissions this accounts for. But yeah, I've heard anywhere up to kind of 90% for a company. And this is also where digital carbon falls for most companies. It's a bit Well, it's where the consensus is that you should be accounting for digital, is in scope three, even though I think and we think it's a bit more complicated than that, as it's a non-physical a non-physical thing. It kind of sits across all of them in a way. But yeah, it's been the source or the focus of quite a lot of debate amongst companies, because there's some that obviously don't want to open that Pandora's box of calculating scope three emissions, and there's some that go above and beyond that do. It's becoming increasingly normalized to do that, and there's growing like legislative movements as well that are mandating scope three for some companies depending on size. So there's the SFDR, which you can look up in the EU, and the SDR in the UK. And the US is also making movements to kind of mandate scope three, which I think, you know, within the next few years, we'll kind of wonder why that was never the norm. So yeah, that's the kind of idea of scope one, scope two, and scope three. I think if you ask someone else to explain it, they'd have a totally different way of imagining it, but it's designed to like be applicable to all companies, you know, so like that's why it is quite broad in a way, and it can be interpreted differently. Mm-hmm. And there's no fine line between all of them. It's just a method and a framework that any company could pick up and use to calculate their emissions.
Okay, Rory, I want to talk about you a little bit. So you're the head of digital carbon and sustainability at Green Pixie. How did you get to where you are today? And yeah, tell me a bit about your journey.
Yeah, all of us at Green Pixie have had pretty, I could say weird, or I could say interesting journeys into doing weird. What we do. Yeah, weird. I've before worked in I guess the broader field of like policy and NGOs and international law, that kind of thing. And obviously increasingly like environmental stuff is kind of runs throughout everything that you do in the third sector. Mm-hmm. So it's something that was always cropping up. I studied like international environmental law. Okay. As a master's, so it was always kind of there, but I never solely focused on environment and climate until this role, which I think is true for quite a lot of people these days. There's a lot of which I think is great for the sector, like people jumping in from other areas with slightly different kind of ways of doing things, which is great, particularly from the tech sector, just bringing those different kind of mindsets and experiences and things. But I kind of got interested in digital carbon from that like social angle, weirdly. So I was working for Open Society, and I had to do a lot of research on civic space in Germany and Ireland. Mm-hmm. And part of that research led me down this weird little rabbit hole of the role that data centers play in Ireland's economy. So data centers use about, I mean, Ireland's like a hotspot, like a global center for data processing and big tech and that kind of thing. And in some ways it's been great for the country. And there's also been some downsides. Mm-hmm. So there was some, you know, reports and things that these massive data centers would come in and soak up kind of government investment sometimes, or tax breaks, and take up a lot of land for one, use a lot of energy. So I think it's about 9% of Ireland's national electricity production serves data centers. Yeah. And IOGRID, the Irish National Grids Agency, predicted that could rise to something like 30% by 2030. So it's a significant amount. But they also wouldn't bring with them that many jobs on the ground. So there's often this impression that, you know, data centers are just this kind of almost kind of weird futuristic autonomous machine. Mm. That wasn't giving that much back to society. And again, it's that issue of like intangibility, you know, what do they actually do? It's just this big building, you know. So yeah, I weirdly came came to it through that kind of social angle, and then got chatting to John and the rest of the team. So John's our CEO and co-founder, and Will's the other co-founder. And they explained the more technical side of things and how it's actually, you know, they had some ideas on how to solve some of these issues or kind of demystify them. So that's kind of how I got to where we are now. I think there's a lot of, I've noticed, especially over the pandemic, I think a lot of people have had kind of moves towards this kind of field, which is great, I think.
Definitely. We're all questioning our, having some existential crises, I think.
Yeah.
To do something good for the future rather than doing it. Like, I came from an evil marketing background working for big consumer brands, and I had that existential crisis about 5 years ago and thought, I want to do something better that's going to actually make a difference in the world. To all of us.
Yeah, that's exactly right, isn't it? And I guess you brought your marketing knowledge, you know, into this world, and you're doing things differently and like getting the message across in different ways.
Yeah. Well, we need to, because I won't go into it here, but marketing has a lot to answer for in the climate crisis.
Yeah, it's a kettle of fish.
We'll save that for another podcast. So what gets you out of bed in the morning, Rory, now that you've found Green Pixie and you've moved into the world, this world, you know, what is it that drives you? What gets you excited?
Good question. I think, with Green Pixie, we're all like great friends now. I'm sure a lot of your listeners who have SMEs or work in smaller companies, all like under 10, so we're quite a small group. But it's that, it's the fact you're kind of working with friends, and you know, you can kind of chat things through. There's no like formal structure, which I know, like, does anyone really like that in a job? I don't think so. So yeah, that's kind of what keeps me and like all of us like interested in what we do, is the fact that we can like follow our interests and discuss things with like each other as mates and as friends. Explore some quite interesting like topics, the most interesting thing sometimes is like when you have like, I don't know, half a day discussing something, go into intricate like depths, and then you're like, actually that's not relevant. Which in any other kind of company or sector or whatever, or job, would be like a waste of time, I guess. But yeah, not for us at the moment. I think that's it. And I reckon that's probably the same for a lot of people listening to this, or perhaps that's what people want as well. So I'd encourage everyone to go and work for a small sustainable startup, definitely. Or start your own.
Start your own, exactly. So finally, the last question we ask everybody on the podcast is, which is a good segue from working for a small sustainable business, but do you think there is such a thing as a truly sustainable business yet?
I feel bad saying no for all the companies that are doing so much great stuff, but it kind of has to be a no, doesn't it, at the moment? Like, if anyone's reached, yeah, it's impossible. You can't be a fully sustainable company unless the rest of the world, it's just the way the economy works. And if there was like a truly sustainable company today, like by tomorrow, they wouldn't be unless they're keeping up with everything. So yeah, no sounds like a pessimistic answer, but it's you know, the idea of like kind of moving towards sustainability as a company and like as an economy, like a global economy as a whole, probably will never end. It shouldn't ever end, because there's always going to be more that can be done. So at the moment, no, but there's so many companies that are doing as much as they can, as much as they physically can, and more. Mm-hmm. And that's, I guess that's the most important and encouraging thing.
That's a great way to end our chat today. Thank you so much for joining me today, Rory.
Thank you. That's been great. Thank you for having me on. Great to chat. I'll be back.
Excellent. Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. I hope it has been useful and at least a little bit inspiring for your own business journey. Running a digital carbon report on your website is the first step towards achieving net zero. And if you go to greenpixie.com, click on products and select website carbon report, the good humans at Green Pixie will give you a 30% discount on a digital carbon report. If you enter EarthCo030 at the checkout when prompted, and that's EarthCo030, EarthCo030 at checkout. I'll put those details in the show notes. I'll also put in the show notes how you can find out more about Green Pixie at their website, greenpixie.com, and of course, follow all their social media channels, which I will link in the show notes. This podcast is also available as a written article on weareearthcollective.com. If you'd like to get in touch with me about this episode, or if you have ideas about a future one, or you'd love to come and have a chat with me, I would love to hear from you. You can do that by following at We Are Earth Co on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, or TikTok, and send me a direct message there. I hope you can join me next time. Until then, stay collected and don't forget to keep it green.